shiplap plague. Sarah's bloody nose. As Devin lay against the worn polyester couch in the hospital waiting room, immobile, vision blurred, the connection jolted him as if someone had hooked his spinal cord up to a car battery. Not that first signs mattered at this point, other than to appease Devin's insatiable need to know. He tried to focus on his wife's face, but the lenses of his eyes refused to cooperate. He could only see the faint outline of her body collapsed over that of a patient she had been checking on, what, maybe 10 or 15 minutes ago? She always put others before herself. It's why she wanted to become a doctor in the first place. It's why they both became doctors. And now they were the patients without anyone left to tend to them. Thinking back to the morning, Devin realized his watering eyes were probably the second sign that something was very wrong in the town of East Warhaven. Of course, they brushed the symptoms off as hay fever, all too easily attributed to the unusually dry air and wind they'd been experiencing. Spring pollen was in full effect this year. The notion that something bigger was at play didn't take long to come to him, though. At 9 a.m. that morning, they had dragged themselves into short-staffed St. Margaret's Hospital after a reserved, yet obviously urgent call from the head of ER, who informed them that an unusual number of patients were flowing into the hospital and they needed all hands on deck. First, it was the elderly and young children. Bloody noses, teary eyes, and trouble breathing. By 5 p.m., there were more patients than beds, and the town's population had been slashed in half. The CDC was supposedly on their way, but Devin couldn't recall who had said that and if it was even true. Since he couldn't dial in on Sarah's face or even generate enough force to move his body close enough to hold her hand, he closed his eyes and tried to remember happy moments of their life and the new life they had begun to build.
Stately, plump Jorge Vara sits outside the baggage claim of Terminal 2 at Dublin Airport, his arms crossed in an attitude of studied nonchalance. A yellow silk shirt, complemented smartly by a red sports jacket, black denim jeans, and white suede loafers, is unbuttoned to his depilated chest. He contorts his mustachioed face histrionically and intones, "Domine, quo vadis?" Clowning, he leaps from his seat and brays coarsely, "Hurry up, bitch! Hurry up, you joyless Joycean!" Excursus. Introductory. Nostalgic. Ironically reverential. Fittingly, I commence this narrative with a parody of the novel, which has loomed so large in the lives of us both, the book which has had such an enormous influence, for better or worse, on me, Wells, and on him, Vara, this man whom I have known for almost 40 years. We met at the Honey Bear Nursery School, where we conspired to tickle the toes of our teacher, Mrs. Lydia Seacrest, as she knelt to assist one of our classmates in the construction of a tinker toy robot. Thus began, in mischievous play, a lifelong friendship and a shared fetish for women's feet. In elementary school, we competed with one another for academic distinction and the affection of one Rebecca Melendez. In middle school, while riding the bench of the sub-varsity basketball team, we discussed the results of our earliest experiments with onanism. His inspired by back issues of Hustler, purloined from his father's secret stash. Mine facilitated by the lingerie ads of the JCPenney catalog. In high school, we played soccer, drank beer, smoked weed, dropped acid, listened to classic rock, and double-dated the Emerson twins. Emily took his virginity the same night Evelyn took mine. Almost inseparable adolescent knights errant we were.